Wouldn't you love to have a prayer for every occasion or event in your life? Exactly the right words to say in prayers for grief, healing, or forgiveness for yourself and others? The Positive Prayer Wheel from Unity fans out into 50 short affirmative prayers for just about any life event. You'll want this in your purse, by your bedside, and to give as gifts. Find the Positive Prayer Wheel at unity.org/prayerwheel.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio. Thank you for tuning in for this Unity Partner Program. Unity Online Radio partners with spiritual leaders from organizations whose mission and messages complement Unity's. We are pleased to bring you this program on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to Main Street Vegan with host Victoria Moran. Victoria is an author, inspirational speaker, and a certified holistic health counselor and vegan lifestyle coach. She's here to entertain, educate, and inspire you on your journey to look and feel amazing, eat extraordinary food, help animals, and create a physical body perfectly attuned to spiritual growth. Now, let's get this party started. Here's your host, Victoria Moran.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Main Street Vegan Show. Oh, my gosh. We have been having all kinds of strange technical difficulties. Aren't you glad you're in on those? Well, let me tell you all about them because, you know, whenever you share your problems, they kind of get divided. Isn't that why people get married and get into relationships and do all those difficult things? Well, I'm in relationship with you because you are listening to this podcast and you're on the vegan word journey at some point or other, and I am just tickled pink about that. So I'm going to tell you that what is going on here, well, it's kind of a multiplicity of things. They're doing construction on my building. Do you live in a new building? See, I've never lived in a new building before in my life. I've lived in old houses and old apartments, and I love old. I love funky. I love crown molding. I love windows that don't really open, but isn't that why God made sturdy sticks? I mean, old. Old is good. But I'm in this brand new building, and it's a green building. We're saving the planet in Harlem. I mean, it's really cool in so many ways. But, you know, when people build things these days, they sometimes don't pay attention to some of the basics. And they didn't pay attention to the fact that as the weather changes, the bricks kind of expand and contract, and they need a little room to do that. Well, nobody thought about that on our building, so they're having to replace the entire facade of this big, like, 12-story building that takes up the better part of two-thirds of a block of Manhattan. And they make a lot of noise. And sometimes the drilling is just like, you know, those guys that drill out in the street when they're trying to get to whatever's going on under the concrete. And I never quite know when that's going to be happening. So this morning, there wasn't any noise, so I thought I was safe in doing the show from my apartment. But then they started drilling a lot. But I am doing a good deed this week, and you know what happens when you do good deeds? It comes back to you. So I'm feeding a neighbor's cat while they're out of town, and they gave me their Wi-Fi so I could do the show in their apartment. And then the only background noise would have been a little bit of lovely calico kitty mewing. We would have liked that, wouldn't we? Of course we would. But the Skype didn't work down there. So I came back to my apartment, and the Skype doesn't work here either. So I think we need to chalk that off to one of those days and then add to that our first guest isn't here. let me tell you who he was going to be, and then his mother, who arranged all this to begin with, is going to intervene and make sure that he comes back and maybe does something really wonderful for us. Maybe she'll get his whole band to play us something live. Anyway, we were going to have on Derek Sanders, who's the lead singer for May Day Parade. If you don't know May Day Parade, if you know a teenager, they know May Day Parade. Their music is just exquisite. And they also have a lot of really great stuff going on behind the scenes in terms of human rights work, animal rights work. And Sally Sanders, Derek's mom, is a Main Street Vegan certified vegan lifestyle coach. She's also a full-time humane educator in the schools down there in Florida. So great family doing great stuff that somehow wires were crossed and Derek is not here. So we will bring him on some other time. And I did send a note to our second guest, Stephen Wise of the Non-Human Rights Project and the new wonderful documentary Unlocking the Cage. So maybe he will come on a bit early. If not, it'll just be you and me here in the first 17 or so. If you happen to be listening live, and I know almost nobody listens live, but some people do because whenever we have something to give away, I seem to get calls from people. So how about giving you some good karma? Let's say if you call in the first 17 minutes of this show, like right now, that would be good. How about I send you a copy of my latest book, The Good Karma Diet? I could autograph that to you or to a good friend, somebody with a birthday coming up, or somebody that you just want to spread a little love to. Give us a call. Ask a question. We can talk about being vegan, talk about what's going on in your life. We've got two numbers here, 888-558-6489. That works if you are in the continental United States. We learned last week talking with Ruth Heydrich, the amazing marathoner and iron woman, iron man woman who lives in Hawaii and was calling in from outside the country or outside the continental. But that 888 number only works in the lower 48. That's 888-558-6489, or you can call the other number, and that works from everywhere on the planet, 816-347-5519. Again, that's 816-347-5519. And if you think, I've already got that book, and why should I call into a radio show? Well, it's all about the good karma, because otherwise I'm just here talking to folks for the next 7 minutes, and I didn't know I was going to be doing that. But never being really at a loss for words, I do have some things to share with you. I'm so excited always. There's so much great stuff going on in the vegan world. So something that just launched this week, it's this totally, totally cool site, and it's called Lighter. Now, they were around for a while before doing food deliveries, meal deliveries, that kind of thing. And now they have regrouped and relaunched. And at this point, what they're offering is strictly educational, so it's absolutely free. So here's the URL, Lighter, like it's lighter when there are no clouds, .world, lighter.world. And what you will find is a whole bunch of really fascinating vegans helping other vegans and would-be vegans and kind of sort of a little bit now and then vegans to find out what to eat. Because you know what? It seems that people would do this or would join us, at least to a certain extent, except they really don't know what to eat. Well, that's where lighter.world comes in. So some of the people who are signed on to help out with this wonderful project are Christy Morgan. She's been on the show. Christy was the editor of Definitions magazine. She's a bodybuilder. She's a chef and the author of Blissful Bites. Now she does traveling around the world, blissed out retreats. Jean Bauer of Farm Sanctuary is part of it. Janae Claiborne, adorable sweet potato soul, you know her. Dr. Michael Greger, of course, everybody knows Dr. Michael Greger. David Carter, the 300-pound vegan, recently of the NFL, Paul Shapiro from Humane Society of the United States, Josh Balk from Hampton Creek, Kathy Freston, super famous Kathy Freston, Juliana Hever, the plant-based dietitian, Neil Barnard from PCRM. Am I boring you by just reading you everybody who's super cool and well-known and has books and whatnot in the vegan world? Well, they're all over there. Even Marco Borges. Did you catch Marco Borges on one of those entertainment shows this week? He was on our podcast maybe 6 months ago. You can catch him in the archives. He's Beyonce's trainer. 22 Days Nutrition is his thing. Anyway, they're all there, and even I'm there. And what we do is help you with grocery lists and menus and recipes and inspiration, and how to connect with us. So this is a very, very cool way for, at least at this point, absolutely no cost, for you to get some really, really helpful information and insights from different vegans who eat in a little bit different ways. If you've listened to this show for a while, you know, I kind of lean in the Ayurvedic direction. I really love that yogic philosophy of healing and spirituality and kind of that connection of the body and the spirit. And I'm on there with that kind of approach, and you've got other people that are raw or nearly raw. You've got other people that are very much low oil, whole food, plant-based, that kind of thing. So you can just pick and choose and find the expert and the idea that suits you. And if you actually want to go straight to my page, I think you can do that. lighter.world/providers/Victoria_Moran. That would be nice. Great. Yeah, I probably get some points if you go straight to my page. So that would be cool. And then the other thing I want to let you know about is over at the MainStreetVegan.net blog, do you speak to groups? Do you want to get this message out with your very own voice? Well, Carol Morgan Cox has posted a magnificent blog post this week in which she says, make your audience the hero. Isn't that interesting? We always think when you give a talk, you want everybody looking at you and you're the center of everything. But the magic, says Carol Morgan Cox, is making the audience the hero. So check that out, mainstreetvegan.net/blog. And I have a happiness. Our guest is on the line. So I think what I'll do is introduce him. We'll go to break, and then we'll come back and just jump right into all the amazing work being done by Stephen M. Wise. He's president of the Non-Human Rights Project, and he's practiced animal protection law for 30 years. He teaches animal rights jurisprudence at several law schools, and he is the author of several books, including Rattling the Cage, Toward Legal Rights for Animals, and Drawing the Line, Science and the Case for Animal Rights. His work was highlighted on Dateline NBC, and he and the Non-Human Rights Project are the subject of a new documentary, Unlocking the Cage, which just premiered and is going to be premiering all over the country in theatrical release. Many in the media are calling this Blackfish for Chimps. Yes, may it be that, as Mr. Wise and his team show us in the film how they have filed the first lawsuits that seek to transform an animal from a thing with no rights to a person with legal protections. Don't you want to hear from Stephen Wise? Well, if you do, stay with us through these announcements, and we'll be back nonstop, no more breaks. Stephen Wise and the Chimps, forever and ever. Stay with us.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
what if you could experience vibrant health, help heal the planet, and be a great friend to God's animal kingdom through simple choices you make at breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Authors Victoria and Adair Moran say you can do this easily, affordably, and deliciously in their new book, Main Street Vegan. Everything you need to know to eat healthfully and live compassionately in a real world. Loaded with practical tips, straightforward information, and fabulous recipes, Main Street Vegan will help you on your journey toward a plant-based diet. The perks include more energy, an easy way to keep your weight where you want it, feeling younger as you grow older, and maybe even a boost to your spiritual life. Purchase Main Street Vegan from BN.com, Amazon.com, or your favorite bookseller.
What is the key to happiness? Would you like to find the fountain of youth? How about all the money and love that you could handle? Well, my friends, it is there for you. You just need to strip off the false beliefs that keep your divine inheritance from being attracted into your life. You need to be real. Be vulnerable. Be naked. What are you waiting for? Let's get naked. This transformational program with Reverend Heidi Allfree is an invitation to explore and remove the blocks that keep you from emotional freedom. Listen to Heidi and her revealing guests as they embrace the power of spiritual nakedness as a guaranteed way to live an authentic and transparent life. Expose yourself to your greatness on Mondays at 3 p.m. Central Time. Let's get naked. No dress code required. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
You gotta get rid of your butt. It's bigger than it would appear. It hinders your forward movement when you keep bringing up the rear.
You're listening to Main Street Vegan with Victoria Moran. If you have questions or comments about today's topic or any other area of interest, we invite you to follow Victoria underscore Moran on Twitter or email her at mainstreetvegan@unityonlineradio.org. Now, back to Main Street Vegan.
Welcome back, everybody. It's such fun because today I'm on a phone because my Skype is not cooperating, having a little bit less communication with Jeff, our engineer, than usual, and I just wanted to make sure that when I was speaking with Stephen Wise during the break that was indeed private because we were just talking about stuff. But he did say the coolest thing, and I hope it's okay that I can add this to the introduction because this tells you really what kind of person he is. He said that he used to have some fear of flying, so he learned how to fly. That sounds like the personality of a man who would spend 30 years working to get personhood for chimps. Welcome, Stephen Wise.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Such a pleasure. Oh, my goodness. Well, start from the beginning. Where did it all start?
Well, it all started in 1980 when I picked up a book by the Australian philosopher named Peter Singer that told me things that I didn't know about how we treated non-human animals. And I had not realized how we exploited them, how I was involved in it, how many animals were exploited, really how awful the whole thing was. And once I read that, I decided almost immediately that I would try to spend the rest of my legal career representing the interests of all these millions or billions of entities who could feel and suffer and think, but didn't seem to have any lawyers who were representing even their most fundamental interests. And so that's what I decided to do in 1980. I thought I was the only lawyer on the planet who was doing that until the end of 1981 when I learned about a meeting in New York City the day after Thanksgiving where some lawyers from the West Coast were trying to form an organization that was then would be called Attorneys for Animal Rights, and a few years on we would change it to the name of the Animal Legal Defense Fund, which is obviously still working very well. And I went to that meeting, and I met many of the lawyers that I certainly know now, and we formed Attorneys for Animal Rights, and by 1985, I became president of what was then the Animal Legal Defense Fund, and I would remain the president for the next 10 years. But also by 1985, I realized that it was going to be extraordinarily difficult for lawyers to be able to represent even the most fundamental interests of non-human animals. And the reason was, I finally concluded, was there was a structural problem. And the problem was, is that all non-human animals in 1985 and in 2016 and for thousands of years before, hundreds of years before, had always been viewed as legal things and not legal persons. So a legal person is an entity who has the capacity for at least one legal right. A legal thing lacks the capacity for any legal rights at all. And what I began to envision in 1985 was this legal wall, and on one side of the wall were the legal things of the world, and the other side, who lacked the capacity for any legal rights. On the other side of the wall were legal persons who had the capacity for an infinite number of legal rights. And I began to understand that there was movement between the persons and the things on the wall. It was just very slow, but it was indeed a dynamic process. And so if I look in 1985 or I looked in 2016, all of the non-human animals of the world would be on the thing side of the wall, and all the human beings would be on the person side of the wall. But that if I had looked again, if I had looked in, say, 1770, there would have been all the non-human animals of the world on the thing side of the wall, but many human beings on there as well. Human slaves, maybe women, maybe children, maybe others who would also be seen as legal things who lack the capacity for any kind of a legal right. And that a lot of the civil rights work over the last two or three centuries has been to keep punching holes in that wall and passing through those human beings who are on the thing side of the wall to the person side of the wall. And that is what I thought needed to be done again with non-human animals, that we had to have a reason for having the judge accept the fact that we could knock in more holes through that wall and begin passing some of the animals of the world from the thing side to the person side. And we also point out to the judges, and indeed the Non-Human Rights Project does every time it goes to court, that there are many entities who are not humans on the person side of the wall as well. That certainly since the Citizens United case came down a few years ago, most Americans understand that for many purposes corporations can be persons, but so can ships and counties and states. And then we also point out that in some of our sister English-speaking countries, there are other kinds of non-humans who are persons. And we point out that in India, that a mosque has been a person, or Hindu idols a person, or the holy books of the Sikh religions a person. And we point to an Australian treaty from 2012 in which it was agreed between the indigenous peoples of New Zealand and the Crown that a certain river in New Zealand would be a person who had owned its own riverbed. And so what we try to do is explain to the judges that being a person is not a biological issue. It's not a taxonomic issue. It's really a matter of moral principle and public policy, as that every legal jurisdiction has to decide for itself, who ought to be a person, whether as a matter of policy or as a matter of principle, and then make that entity a person. And so we had decided that the time had come to begin making at least some non-human animals persons so that their most fundamental rights would be protected.
So did you start with chimps?
Yes. We decided to start with those non-human animals who we thought might have the best chance of courts characterizing them as persons. And we looked at many species, and we ultimately decided that chimpanzees would be our good first plaintiffs, because since Jane Goodall went to Gombe in the 1960s, a tremendous amount of research has been done on the cognition of chimpanzees, both in the wild and in captivity. Much of what we've learned about the cognition of chimpanzees shows how closely related it is to ours, and how chimps think or how chimps feel or is very close to how we think or how we feel. And we thought that judges and others would be able to empathize more with a non-human animal like a chimpanzee whose cognitive abilities were so similar to ours. So we began with chimpanzees in a broader sense. We're looking at all four species of great apes right now, chimpanzees and bonobos, gorillas and orangutans, the two species of elephants, African elephants and Indian elephants, and also such cetaceans as an orca. And the reason we're doing this is we think that there's a huge amount of information about it, and that these are the ones that would be our great first plaintiffs as we begin to try to break a hole through the wall and bring in the first non-human animals from the thing side to the person side.
Absolutely. Do you get any flack from people in the animal rights movement who think you ought to be bringing everybody in all at once?
Well, some people don't understand what we're doing, and because of that, we sometimes do get some flack. They think that what we're doing is just trying to bring those animals over. It gets kind of complicated because there has to be reasons why you might give to a court as to why a non-human animal ought to be a legal person, and that's one of the reasons that it took us, so many years. It took me so many years to be able to think about it, write about these ideas before I was even able to file the first lawsuit. So I began planning this in 1985, and the issues are really so complicated that I thought that it would take about 30 years till about 2015 before we'd be able to file the first lawsuits. And it turned out it was close to that. It was 28 years instead of 30 years that we filed the first lawsuits in 2013 instead of 2015. But one of the things that we had to do was to try to be able to come up with legal theories that judges would accept, because they're the kind of legal ideas that judges work with. They implicate values and principles that judges say in their judicial decisions that they believe, that they learned in law school, that they utilize day in and day out as judges. So it took some time to be able to identify those, and I finally identified those as being the ideas of liberty and equality. A liberty right is the kind of right that someone's entitled to, not because you're comparing yourself to someone else, because of some quality that you have. While an equality right is a kind of right that you're entitled to because you're like someone else who has that right in a relevant way. So our arguments stem always from ideas of liberty and equality, and then we also had to be able to find the right causes of action. What was really the key that would open the courthouse door for us to be able to make our liberty and equality arguments? And we ultimately decided that we would use what's called a common law writ of habeas corpus, which might have two terms that people who aren't lawyers might not be familiar with. One is the idea of a common law, and the other is of habeas corpus. There's all kinds of law in an English-speaking country like the United States is, with the exception of Louisiana, which is a civil law state. But we, in the common law, not only are statutes law or the Constitution's law, but what the judges say is law is also law. In other words, in a common law system, judges have not only the ability but the duty to create and recreate law when the changing experiences of the citizens or the changing morals or new scientific facts come in. The judges have a duty to keep the law current with science and morality and the experiences of the world. And so we decided that we were going to make common law arguments. So we were going to make arguments to the judges saying, you judges are the people who said that non-human animals were persons. It wasn't you, it was your other judges hundreds of years ago. But judges said it, that non-human animals were not persons, but they were things who lacked the capacity for a right. And so since courts said they were things, courts can now say, no, we made a mistake, they're not things, now they're persons. So we we decided that we would then make arguments to the judges under the common law. And then we also eventually decided to use the writ of habeas corpus. So habeas corpus is Latin for you have the body. And it's a really old writ. It's a very important writ. It's called the Great Writ because it means that when someone is detained by someone else, someone is being imprisoned by someone else, a third person can run to court on behalf of the detained prisoner and ask that the judge issue a writ of habeas corpus, which means the jailer has to bring the body of the prisoner before the court and give a legally sufficient reason for detaining that body. And there were some really good things about writs of habeas corpus that would allow us to be able to bring suit on behalf of a non-human animal such as a chimpanzee. So while we were thinking about all these things and developing all of these ideas, we had to spend many years beginning to communicate them to the legal community. So we would begin to teach classes. You know, I taught my first class in animal rights law at the Vermont Law School now 26 years ago in 1990. In 2000, I taught the first case in animal rights law at the Harvard Law School. And between those two times, certainly up until now, there's probably 120, 130, 140 law schools who have some animal law or animal rights law class. And then we had to write law review articles, and I had to write books. I've written four books. I've probably written 12 or 15 law review articles. I talk to a lot of people, and that begins to get the ideas into the minds not only of the public, but also of the lawyers and the professors and the judges. So it's all kind of a long haul in which everything came together in December 2013, so that the Non-Human Rights Project felt that this was about the earliest time in which we could file lawsuits on behalf of a non-human animal where we had some reasonable chance of success.
So do you file these on behalf of a particular chimp or the species in general?
Well, we have so far, we filed lawsuits on behalf of four specific chimpanzees in the state of New York. We filed three separate lawsuits in December of 2013. We filed one lawsuit on behalf of Kiko, who is a chimpanzee who's being imprisoned in a cement storefront in Niagara Falls. We filed one lawsuit on behalf of Tommy, who is a chimpanzee who's imprisoned in a warehouse in a used trailer lot in Gloversville, a small town, New York. And then we filed a third lawsuit on behalf of Hercules and Leo, who are two chimpanzees who are being, really used and abused and exploited in kind of a grotesque kind of experimentation at Stony Brook University. They were being used not even for medical or health reasons, but there were the anatomy professors there were curious to know why or how humans develop the ability to have develop straight legs instead of bent legs like chimpanzees. And so they kept Hercules and Leo from the time that they were two-year-old little guys till they were eight. They kept them, imprisoned in a cage in the basement of a computer lab at Stony Brook University. They never got to go outside. And they would have wires thrust into their muscles. They would be forced to undergo general anesthesia often. It was really a horror show. So we filed suit on behalf of those two chimpanzees as well. And we understood from the beginning that judges were going to be really surprised when they were confronted with these kinds of suits. We had fashioned our lawsuits so that we would be able to make the arguments in terms of those values and principles that the judges indeed acknowledge that they hold. But it was still on behalf of a non-human animal, which judges hadn't seen. And many of the judges probably had never even seen a habeas corpus case on the side of a human, on behalf of a human being. So in the first week of December 2013, we went from court to court to court along the whole length of the state of New York, filing these kinds of lawsuits, asking that the courts issue what was called or an order to show cause. New York has its own kind of habeas corpus statute in which you can seek a writ of habeas corpus, but if you do, you're asking that the jailer bring the prisoner before the judge, or you can issue what's called ask for an order to show cause in which the jailer comes in without the prisoner. So we did not want the chimpanzees to have to be brought into court in New York, so we asked that the judge issue these order to show causes. So that's what we did. And then we also filed writs of habeas corpus in the state of New York for another reason. Most times when someone files a lawsuit in the United States and it's tried, that's the end of it. So if I claim that you breach a contract and I sue you for breach of contract and I lose or I win, that's the end. Nobody files suit again. Whatever happens just once. And if I then file the second lawsuit, the defendant could then use the defense of what's called res judicata. The thing has already been decided, and your case will automatically be thrown out. But there's an exception in the state of New York for a writ of habeas corpus, and so that's one of the many reasons that we chose the state of New York, because we really felt that we were beginning a dialogue with the judges first of the state of New York and then judges in other jurisdictions as well, in which we would argue to them for the first time why a non-human animal should be brought from the thing side to the person side of that legal wall. And we expected that the judges were not going to like that, or they would, because they wouldn't have heard about it before, and judges tend to be, you know, conservative kinds of people, and that we expected that we were going to lose. We didn't expect to even have to be able to go in front of a judge to argue that an order to show cause should be issued. To our pleasant surprise, we were. In those first three cases, twice the judges allowed us to come in and argue at length about why they should issue the order to show cause. In one of the cases, that one involving Hercules and Leo, the judge wouldn't even allow us to come in. I wouldn't know that judge if he ran me over in a car, because we never saw him. And then we would argue the cases. The judges then would not issue the order to show cause because they didn't think that a chimpanzee was a person. And then we went up on appeal, and we've been in that dialogue back and forth with the courts of New York as they say, well, we don't like this argument. Then another court might say, we don't like that argument. Now the third court says, we don't like this argument. And so whenever we've lost, we've always lost on a different ground. So the courts are still it's still unstable. They're still trying to figure out how you deal with these cases. And then if we did lose, then we would simply refile the case in another jurisdiction, which you could do under the habeas corpus law of the state of New York. So here we are in May of 2016, still finally, you know, having cases open on behalf of all four chimpanzees, Hercules and Leo, Tommy and Kiko. So we're in we're well into our third year of litigating in the state of New York on behalf of chimpanzees. We'll probably be in there in a year from now. We'll probably still be litigating on behalf of one or more of these chimpanzees. Meanwhile, we're getting cases ready on behalf of elephants in another state, and we're looking at a third and a fourth state where we might file suit, either on behalf of elephants or on behalf of apes. We'd like to file suit on behalf of cetaceans, such as orcas, but the problem is that in a writ of habeas corpus, if you win, then the judge orders the release of your client. And while there are elephant and chimpanzee sanctuaries and that our clients could be released to, there are no, right now, sanctuaries for orcas or cetaceans. So we have not wanted to file suits on behalf of them until there's a place to send them if we win.
Of course. So what's the difference in terms of these four chimpanzees that you talked about, the sort of lawsuit that you're filing and someone just trying to say Tommy, for example, or Kiko is being held in violation of what animal welfare statutes already exist?
That is a really good question. It's one that judges have all the time. It's really the difference between animal welfare and animal rights. In fact, we don't even call ourselves an animal rights organization. We call ourselves the Non-Human Rights Project. It's a civil rights organization that focuses on the fundamental rights of non-human animals. And the rights issues that we argue come from a different place than welfare does. Our work is based on human rights law. We base it on the abolitionist arguments. In fact, there was a famous case in 1772 in London involving a black slave named James Somerset, who had been kidnapped as an 8-year-old boy in West Africa, taken and sold to a Scottish businessman in Virginia named Charles Stewart, who had then risen to the top of the customs service in the colonies in the 18th century, and he would go from Georgia to Massachusetts and bring James Somerset with him. And in the 1760s, he moved to England, and at that point in London, James Somerset decided that he didn't want to be a slave anymore, and he escaped. And eventually, Charles Stewart decided that he did not want James Somerset brought back to be a slave, but to be his slave, but he wanted him to be chained to a ship in London Harbor and sailed to Jamaica, where he would be sold in the slave markets there and live the 3 to 5 years that a slave would live harvesting sugarcane in Jamaica. And so the slave catchers found James Somerset, and they had him chained to the deck of the ship. But before he could sail, people went in on James Somerset's behalf, and they sought a writ of habeas corpus from Lord Mansfield, who was the Chief Justice of the Court of King's Bench. And Lord Mansfield issued that order to show cause, or he issued the writ of habeas corpus. And every time we've gone into court and we've asked the judge to issue either an order to show cause or a writ of habeas corpus, you know, I think back to that day. I think this is exactly what the people who went on behalf of James Somerset had to deal with. Just that moment when they asked the judge to issue a writ of habeas corpus on behalf of a thing. And for us, the thing is our chimpanzees. For the folks in 1772 or 1771 England, it was a human slave who was seen as a thing who lacked the capacity for legal rights. And I've now gone through that many times, but every time I realize that's a really important moment when the judge has to look into his or her kind of legal soul and decide whether they're going to give us a chance and issue that writ of habeas corpus or an order to show cause. And those first three times that we filed the suit on behalf of the four chimpanzees, none of the judges issued the order to show cause. And then we had to go up to appeals, and the courts were ruling all over the place, as they still have. But then we decided to, because there's no res judicata on habeas corpus in New York, we decided then to file suit again on behalf of Hercules and Leo in Manhattan almost exactly a year ago today. And we drew a judge named Justice Barbara Jaffe. And Justice Jaffe, for the first time in history, did, in May of 2015, issue an order to show cause. She ordered Stony Brook University to come into court and give a legally sufficient reason for imprisoning these two chimpanzees. So that was an extraordinary moment for us, in that, just like in the James Somerset case in 1771, Justice Jaffe had issued the order to show cause in 2015 on behalf of chimpanzees. And several weeks later, we would have a shootout, you know, a full-blown hearing in her court as to whether or not the Stony Brook folks could imprison chimpanzees. And then she issued a decision, a very complex one, in July of 2015, in which she agreed with almost every one of our arguments. And I say almost because we got hung up on a technicality, in that the other side had argued that Justice Jaffe, who was sitting in a lower court in Manhattan, was bound by a higher court that had decided against us in another part of New York State. We argued that she wasn't, but she felt that she was. And so at that point, she said that chimpanzees might indeed get rights, but that she would have to deny our writ of habeas corpus and, quote, for now, unquote. And so that case is up on appeal, and then we have two more cases. We filed two more suits in Manhattan again, and, of course, they were denied because of the same issue, the question of whether or not the judge is bound by this other court in central New York. And so all these cases are now up in front of the appellate court in Manhattan, and they're not bound by that that other court because they're at the same level as that other appellate court. And so we're about to, sometime in 2016, you know, have another, you know, huge argument in the appellate court in Manhattan as to whether or not a chimpanzee or any non-human animal can be a person for the purpose of habeas corpus or any other purpose.
Oh, my goodness, you're on the right side of history.
we believe so. We are on the right side of history. And we not only cite the slave cases, and we have many slave cases, but the Somerset case is the most important one, but we also cite a case in 1879 called Standing Bear versus Crook, where a Native American had never before tried to file a writ of habeas corpus when they had been imprisoned by the U.S. Army, and so Standing Bear was the first Native American to do that, and the U.S. government opposed it, claiming that Standing Bear was not a person, a Native American could not be a person, and that court ruled that indeed a Native American was a person, and so we cite not only the slave cases, but also the Native American case, such as Standing Bear, and we do believe that there are historical tides that have been sweeping through the courts, and not just in the United States, but many places, for a long, long time, and we are on that tide.
So are there other countries where a chimpanzee or another non-human animal has human status, or person status, I guess is what we would
not,
say.
Not really. There are very few countries in which anyone has ever tried. That's one of the reasons that the Non-Human Rights Project has been holding its hand out to lawyers in other countries. That's one of the reasons why my wife and I have to wear ID tags to make sure we remember what each other looks like. Because I travel throughout the world meeting with lawyers trying to find out whether there's anything that the Non-Human Rights Project can do to assist them. So we're working with lawyers or political groups. I have worked with them or spoken with them in England, in France, Holland, Portugal, Spain, Argentina, New Zealand, Australia, and some of those folks end up working closely with us, some of them not as closely, but we believe that we're dealing with really a worldwide phenomenon. The Non-Human Rights Project happens to be at the forefront of it in the United States, but we understand that when we're standing up in a court in New York City, that we're also being heard in Buenos Aires and in London, and in Sydney and in Lisbon, and in Madrid.
Absolutely thrilling. I can hardly wait to play this show for my husband, who is a lawyer, and hears people make jokes about lawyers and say unkind things about lawyers. You guys are going to change the world for animals in a way that the rest of us are not able to. So I'm just extremely excited, very, very excited about the work you're doing and about the film. So
well, the
I
film
know
is what I was going to say when I went into, about 5 years ago, it dawned to me that what we were doing was making history. And I thought that what we were doing, and of course we didn't know what we were going to do, but as we were doing it, we thought that it should be the subject of a film. And so I talked to one of my students at the Vermont Law School once, who has a sister who is a producer in New York City. And after the class is over, I went to New York City 3 or 4 times and took her out to lunch and said, you got to do this. You have to represent us on this film. And she eventually said yes. And then she goes out and finds really two of the most respected documentary filmmakers in the world, D.A. Pennybaker and Chris Hegedus. And the following year, D.A. Pennybaker becomes the first documentary filmmaker to win an Academy Award for Lifetime Achievement. And he's extraordinarily respected. And they spent the next 4 years following us everywhere, getting cameras into courtrooms when they could. They had access to all of our private meetings, they came to our homes and filmed, and they just got the whole, I think they filmed about 400 hours, and then eventually in December came out with a 90-minute film called Unlocking the Cage, and it was accepted. It had its world premiere in January at the Sundance Film Festival, where it was received just incredibly well. Of course, I'd never been to a film festival, but I was like overwhelmed by the enthusiasm of the people there who saw our film. And now it's been playing at a series of film festivals across the country and across the world. And now it's opening up its theatrical run at the Film Forum in the West Village in New York City on May 25th. And if you go to the web page called Unlocking the Cage, you'll see a list of all the theaters and all the film festivals over the next 3 or 4 months. They're all over the United States. Some of them are in Europe, and I know they're going to be opening in Canada as well, though I don't think those are on there. And then one of the great parts is that it was purchased by HBO, and so HBO, once it finishes its theatrical run and its film festival run, it will then run on HBO for the next 5 years, and it's also has been purchased by the BBC, by German television, by French television, by Dutch television, and so millions and millions of people around the world are going to get a chance to be exposed to the ideas as to why the time has come for non-human animals to become persons and not things, and how this band of lawyers in the United States, you know, is determined to do it.
And the time has come for Chico, Tommy, Hercules, and Leo to have a face for a few who represent the many. It just means so much. So the website, listeners, is nonhumanrights.org, and there's also the website just for the film, that is unlockingthecage.com. Is that correct?
I believe it is.
Okay, and I'll put everything on the show notes at mainstreetvegan.net, that the Twitter is at nonhumanrights, Facebook nonhumanrights project. We'll put everything up for you. There's also a fundraiser here in New York City on Wednesday the 25th.
It's opening in at the Film Forum, and afterwards we're selling tickets for, believe it or not, after all these years, it's our very first fundraiser, and so we're
having it's about time. And there will also be, if people can't attend the fundraiser on Wednesday, there will be Q&As after the evening performance, I believe, on Thursday and Friday.
I will be there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Okay.
And then finally go home for 48 hours before I head off to Barcelona on Wednesday.
Okay. Well, what a beautiful... Is the film showing there?
It is not. I teach at the Autonomous Law School there in Barcelona. I teach animal rights law.
World is changing. We like to say the world is changing, but when I hear of all these places you're going and everything that you're doing, it really is changing.
If I may say one thing, last week I spent the week in Argentina speaking to animal rights lawyers, and to my absolute astonishment, I was given a diploma of honor by the Argentine Senate for the work I do, and I was made a person, some kind of an honored person in the city of Buenos Aires.
I love
astounded.
It. Yeah, there'll be another Evita, but it'll be about you. So thank you so very much, everybody. The Non-Human Rights Project, the film is Unlocking the Cage. Stephen Wise, bless your heart. Thank you so much. Next week, everybody, we're going to be looking at liberating a whole other sort of animal when Jonathan Balcom, the ethologist, is on the show with his brand new book, What a Fish Knows. In the meantime, God bless you. Eat your veggies.
Thank you for listening to Main Street Vegan. Join us every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Time as Victoria Moran entertains, educates, and inspires you on your vegan journey. This program is sponsored by Main Street Vegan. To learn more about Victoria or to explore training with Main Street Vegan Academy as a vegan lifestyle coach, go to www.mainstreetvegan.net. That's www.mainstreetvegan.net.
If you've ever wondered how a specific Bible verse might be interpreted metaphysically, then Interpret This is for you. In Interpret This, Unity Minister Reverend Ed Townley answers your questions about the Bible and how to apply its verses to your life with passion, depth, and spiritual insight. To submit a question or to enjoy any of his numerous metaphysical interpretations, visit unity.org and click on the Interpret This box.
Benefits of spiritually conscious living start now. For a time-tested method to live with purpose and release your infinite potential, tune in to the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way, with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien every Thursday morning at 10 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Somewhere, tucked away in the Unity Library archives in Unity Village, Missouri, you can find a secret treasure. They are the scripts from Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore's early days on broadcast radio, the teachings of Unity's founders, almost 100 years old. Now, for the first time in history, you can hear them through the power of the Internet. Join Bob Brock every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, for Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past. Discover the wisdom of Charles Fillmore's talks and of other Unity Radio speakers read on the air again. Call in your comments and questions as Bob and his special guests revisit Unity Radio talks of the past, along with historical background from the early days of the Unity movement. That's Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world.
Great teachers through the ages have spoken of the importance of our mind and of being master over our thoughts. How often do we forget that we are the ones who decide what thoughts we'll hold and what thoughts we'll reject? The world's great teachers also remind us that our thoughts create our experience. We may not be able to change what is happening in our world, but we can always choose how we will respond to the changing situations of our lives. With a positive attitude, your chance for success in any situation can be greater. That's because a positive attitude will inspire you to look for workable solutions rather than allowing negative thinking to limit your decision making. This Law of Life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Does music open your heart and bring you peace and joy? Experience the sacredness of sound with Ramdesh Kaur as we travel the world of mantra, kundalini yoga, and devotional music. Join us for a journey into spirit, Thursdays at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern on Spirit Voyage Radio with Ramdesh. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
What if you were intentional about your life, committed to having more energy and being more vibrant? Join Reverend Temple Hayes, spiritual leader of First Unity at Unity Campus in St. Petersburg, Florida, as she guides you on a journey to an intentional and energetic life. Empower your life and fully express the wondrous energy, love, and joy you hold in your wildest imagining. Joyfully and actively know that more important than what happens after you die is the deeper and enriching concern for what happens while you're living. How can you experience an incredible life right now? Learn how each week on The Intentional Spirit, Seeing and Being, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Central Time, right here on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready for deeper spiritual breakthroughs? Have you wondered how to apply spiritual principles to your everyday life in practical ways?
Do you feel your soul is calling you to deeper purposes? Join Reverend Galen McDowell live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central for Truth Transforms, a discussion on how God within you, as you, is the power to transform your life. If you really believe that consciousness determines your experiences and that you are an individualized expression of God, join us as we help awaken and transform the consciousness of humanity. We will discuss, through lecture, live interviews, and call-in questions, spiritual healing, prayer, prosperity, forgiveness, new thought views about eternal life, and much more. The world is waiting for your truth transformation, only on Unity Online Radio.
Wouldn't you love to have a prayer for every occasion or event in your life? Exactly the right words to say in prayers for grief, healing, or forgiveness for yourself and others? The Positive Prayer Wheel from Unity fans out into 50 short affirmative prayers for just about any life event. You'll want this in your purse, by your bedside, and to give as gifts. Find the Positive Prayer Wheel at unity.org/prayerwheel.